now, your hosts for Life from the Pulpit. Here's Nick Perez.
Yes, and how's it? And welcome to Life from the Pulpit, the cutting edge in biblical exposition, coming to you on location in Merced, California, home of the Merced Church of Christ. This is the fastest half-hour podcast in the West, where I, your humble correspondent, the voice of the valley, Nick Perez, offer up news and views you can use on Scripture and society with a little help from my friends. Greetings and welcome to the program. We're talking about Daniel, and we are right in the middle of Daniel, and we're actually going to broach the first chapter dealing with, we've already seen some prophecy, Daniel chapter 2, but this, the rest of the book of Daniel is highly prophetic, all kinds of prophecy here, and unfortunately all kinds of misunderstandings out there about what Daniel chapters 7 through 12 have to say. I'm going to work to cut through the fog and just give it to you straight. It's the only way I know how to give it to you, and give you a proper understanding of what's going on here in Daniel chapter 7. Well, verse 1. In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel saw a dream and visions of his head as he lay in his bed. Then he wrote down the dream and told the sum of the matter. You ever do that before? I think we've all done that, haven't we? Thought about something in your sleep, or you're almost asleep, and you go and you write it down. Well, Daniel did that in the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, 553 B.C. Again, depends on who you ask, but I'm going by this calendar here, 553 B.C. Now, verse 2. Daniel declared, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea. So again, highly figurative, prophetic language here. What's Daniel talking about? I believe Isaiah 17, verses 12 and 13 might help shed some light on this. Ah, the thunder of many peoples, they thunder like the thundering of the sea. And the roar of nations, they roar like the roaring of mighty waters. The nations roar like the roaring of many waters. But he will rebuke them, and they will flee far away, chased like chaff on the mountain before the wind, and whirling dust before the storm. Whenever you see talk about the sea, anywhere in your Bible, it's talking about nations, peoples, right? Nations and peoples. That's what you see there. Isaiah 17 helps shed some light on that. Also, Revelation 17, verse 15, the angel said to me, the waters that you saw where the prostitute is seated are peoples and multitudes and nations and languages. It's important that we understand that we have that little hermeneutical principle there about what when someone has a vision, when someone has a prophecy like Daniel does in this case, and it shows up again, Revelation chapter 20, verse 13, chapter 21, verse 1, about the sea. And then you have that principle there from Isaiah, also from Revelation 17, verse 15. The seas, that means nations. Daniel sees the seas being stirred up by the four winds of heaven, and then verse 3, four great beasts come out of the sea. Four nations, as it were, coming up out of the sea of nations. That's what we see here. Why four? Maybe because of the four winds, perhaps. Nevertheless, here are these four beasts that came out of the sea, different from one another. Verse 4, and we're going to see just how different as we go through this. The first was like a lion and had eagle's wings. Then as I looked, its wings were plucked off, and it was lifted up from the ground and made to stand on 2 feet like a man, and the mind of a man was given to it. We've seen this little bit of this about feathers and wings. It reminds me of Nebuchadnezzar. Remember we read about him over in chapter 4 where he loses his mind. He goes out to the field. His hair grows out like eagle's feathers, and his nails grow out like talons. His experience in becoming human again after he's driven wild, after becoming an animal, animalistic at least. And so there may be some reference to that here in verse 4. But nevertheless, this first beast that comes out of the sea, this is Babylon. And it's important that we get the time frame right here because Daniel, we've still got, almost a couple decades left of the Babylonian Empire. And here is this lion that comes out, and these are These are kingdoms that we're seeing here. In fact, if you jump down to verse 17, Daniel 7, verse 17, these four great beasts are four kings or kingdoms, depending on your translation, who shall arise out of the earth. Got it? And again, it's just the interpretation is given for us at the end of this chapter, so we don't have to grasp and wonder about what's going on here. Verse 23, there will be a fourth kingdom that comes out. That's the four beasts. That fourth one is another kingdom. Out of this kingdom, 10 kings shall arise. Where we're going to end up, that's Rome, but I'll deal with that more in more detail in just a moment. But anyway, this lion with eagle's wings has power. It has to do with power. It has to do with strength, and that's certainly typical of Babylon. Jeremiah 49 and 50 talks about Babylon being a lion. In Ezekiel, Babylon is pictured as a great eagle that swoops down and picks up Judah. It's powerful. It's fast. It's an animal that every other animal should fear, right? This beast that comes out, right? And that's what Babylon was. Babylon was the kingdom to fear when it ruled. But then the wings are plucked off, right? That means its power is taken away. It'll have its heyday, and then it's going to fall. He throws in some other imagery here, but he's really working toward one thing, and that's the fourth beast, which we're going to see in just a moment. So there's a large section in this chapter that's devoted to that fourth beast, which is, again, I say Rome. Don't let anybody tell you different. But at any rate, Babylon is now represented. It was represented as gold, chapter 2. Now it's this lion beast with wings, eagle's wings. And it will not be represented as anything else. This is the last we're going to hear of Babylon. Makes sense because we go chronologically. Other kingdoms are going to be represented in a couple of other ways. And in fact, two of these kingdoms, beast number two, beast number three, are going to be presented in a couple of ways. Next, verse 5, and behold, another beast, a second one, like a bear, was raised up on one side. It had three ribs in its mouth between its teeth, and it was told, arise, devour much flesh. Here's this bear beast that comes out, raised on one side. First of all, who is this? I believe it's the Medo-Persian Empire. Persian Empire was known for bears. Persian Empire was powerful enough to conquer Babylon. We saw that at the close of chapter 5. They did conquer the Babylonian Empire. The typical interpretation of the bear being raised up on one side, well, it has to do with the Medes and the Persians. The Persians, they were stronger than the Medes were. So that side is raised up. It's a little stronger. Cyrus, he was a Persian, and he was the king. And he's the one who bestowed, he gave Darius the kingdom. Darius received the kingdom. He didn't conquer it. Cyrus was the one in charge. And so that's typically how we understand it. What about these three ribs? They seem to represent Babylon, at the time Lydda, which is Turkey, and also Egypt, especially by Cyrus's son, Cambyses. This empire is going to come up again in Daniel chapter 8. And it'll be the Medes and the Persians. In fact, I believe 8 verse 20 helps to shed some light on this. As for the ram that you saw with the two horns, just an ordinary ram, these are the kings of Media and Persia. So that's the Medo-Persian Empire that comes after the Babylonians. All right, next, third beast, verse 6. After this I looked, and behold, another, like a leopard, with four wings of a bird on its back. And the beast had four heads, and dominion was given to it. Leopards, what are they known for? Speed. In exact, that's how Alexander the Great came to power. He came conquering into conquering. He did it quick, very fast. And then the leopard in chapter 8 will turn into the shaggy goat and travel all over without touching the ground and stuff like that. We'll deal with that in the next episode. But at any rate, four heads and the wings, that would give it even more power and strength and speed, and more attention is given to the four heads, right? This four wings here, and the beast had four heads. After Alexander dies, his kingdom is divided among his four generals. That's why you have four heads here, these four wings. That's what we're going to see in chapter 6. He's going to have chapter 8, I should say. He's going to have four horns. Four horns instead of the four heads and four wings. That's verse 21 of chapter 8. And so that all has to do with the breaking up, the division of Alexander's kingdom after he dies. Now notice, at the end of that verse, dominion was given to it. By whom? God, of course. That's the principle throughout Daniel. God is the one who raises up kingdoms, tears down kingdoms, and that sort of thing. And so that's that power that will be given to Alexander. Dominion will be given to that kingdom. It's going to be given by God. And now the vision shifts as God shows Daniel the different aspects of these kingdoms. Chapter 2, 7, and 8, they're different. And he's showing, again, different aspects of these different kingdoms. Well, now let's talk about this last beast, because that's this fourth beast, which is really what this prophecy is all about. All right, verse 7, after this I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, terrifying and dreadful and exceedingly strong. It had great iron teeth. It devoured and broke in pieces and stamped what was left with its feet. It was different from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them another horn, a little one, before which 3 of the first horns were plucked up by the roots. Behold, in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking great things. All right, terrifying, dreadful, exceedingly strong beast with 10 horns. What's all this stuff about here? Certainly doesn't match any animal that we're familiar with, I don't think. But this is very different. Not like the vision in chapter 2, where he just saw the legs of iron and the feet of iron and clay. That was the Roman Empire. Remember, we talked about that. Go back and check out that episode if you missed it. But this fourth beast, it devours, it crushes, it takes down all the other remaining empires, right? It's different because it's extremely powerful. It's extremely dominant. But there's also something strange about it. Beast that has 10 horns instead of 2. 2's normally what you get from... What's this all about? Well, jump ahead to verse 24 real quick to the interpretation. As for the 10 horns, out of this kingdom 10 kings shall arise, and another shall arise after them. He shall be different from the former ones and shall put down 3 kings. Interesting. Interesting. Verse 8, we see the horns come up. They represent... In verse 8, we see this other horn, this little horn that comes up, which represents another king that comes to power. And this extra horn replaces 3 of the original kings. But verse 25 says that he shall speak words against the Most High, he shall wear out the saints of the Most High, he shall think to change times and law, and they shall be given into his hand for time, times, and half a time. But hey, his time is short, okay? One, this king here is very arrogant, very arrogant. We see that here, verses 11, 21, 25, he's speaking all these great things. Verse 11, I looked then because of the sound of the great words that the horn was speaking. And as I looked, the beast was killed, its body destroyed. We'll talk about that more in just a moment. But Daniel, he's describing history in this image, or in this vision, I should say. In the image before he did, chapter 2, now he's using animals just so he can talk about this beast, much stronger than any other animal. And now God is going to give the interpretation for this dream, for this vision that he sees here. Again, we're dealing with 4 kingdoms, not anymore, and nothing else except for Babylon, Medo-Persians, the Grecian Empire, and Rome. Now, verse 9. As I looked, thrones were placed, and the Ancient of Days took his seat. His clothing was white as snow. The hair of his head looked pure, like pure wool. His throne was fiery flames. Its wheels were burning fire. A stream of fire issued and came out from before him. 1,000,000 served him, and 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The court sat in judgment, and the books were open. By the way, this series on Daniel is a setup for Revelation. You get the exact same language in Revelation 5 and verse 11. Very interesting. All right, what happens? God does a couple things. He concludes that the one horn that's uttering great things, uttering great boasts, it's not going to happen for a while. First, we see here he sets up these thrones. Thrones are set up. You know, this last king, he's kind of shaking his fist at God, and he's persecuting the saints. As we see here in verse 11, in verse 12. And so we see all these different things. God is up in heaven. He's watching all this. And now we see him sit as judge. And he sets up his courtroom for judgment. The court sits. Books are opened. And so in verses 9 and 10, you get a description of God as the judge. Verse 26, you get the same imagery. The court shall sit in judgment. His dominion, that is the dominion of this horn, this one king, shall be taken away to be consumed and destroyed to the end. That 11th king will be destroyed once judgment is rendered. It's almost a casual scene, you know. God is just, he sees this little horn, his actions. He comes and very casually he sits down and issues judgment. I want to emphasize this is not final judgment. This is not the end of time. This has to do with one of the many comings of the Lord that you see in Scripture. And it's all over, Old and New Testament, all these different comings. He's coming just to judge this one king in time. Now, verse 11, I looked then because of the sound of the great words that the horn was speaking, and as I looked, the beast was killed, and its body destroyed and given over to be burned with fire. As for the rest of the beast, their dominion was taken away, but their lives were prolonged for a season of time. They're just going to kind of limp along for a little bit. But God, again, Daniel, he just keeps watching until God deals with it, and he does. And the rest of the beasts are also taken away. Now, verses 13 and 14. I saw in the night visions, and behold, the clouds of heaven, there came one like a son of man. And he came to the Ancient of Days and was presented before him. And to him was given dominion and glory and a kingdom, that all peoples, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion, which shall not pass away, and his kingdom one that shall not be destroyed. This is the universal scope of God's plan. We see this with the establishment of this one, like a son of man. He's coming toward the Ancient of Days, that is going toward God. He's ascending, going back to the Ancient of Days. He's been out doing something. What has he been doing? Where has he been? Judging. And you get, again, images again and again in your Bible of God coming in the clouds. When God comes in the clouds, that's him coming in judgment. Now, let me see if I can get you a couple of passages that show this. Verse 1 of Isaiah 19, an oracle concerning Egypt. Behold, the Lord is riding on a swift cloud and comes to Egypt. There's some imagery there. It's all over. He comes in judgment in time. He's coming in judgment on Egypt in Isaiah chapter 19. That's just one illustration. He comes in the clouds in judgment. He goes back in the clouds, as it were. Psalm 2, verses 10 through 12. Hebrews 1, verses 5 and 6. Don't have time to grab those for you. You can look them up on your own. But it looks like this son of man, he's been waging war on this little horn. He judges him because he's harmed the Christians. He's harmed them enough. He's had enough, and he issues judgment. And verse 14 sounds an awful lot like Revelation 5 and verse 9, also chapter 6 and verse 16. The Son, one like a son of man, the Son, the Lamb, Jesus, that's who is the king and that's who is ruling. Well, what about this interpretation? The rest of the chapter, verse 15. As for me, Daniel, my spirit within me was anxious. The visions of my head alarmed me. I approached one of those who stood there and asked him the truth concerning all this, an angel it would seem. So he told me and made known to me the interpretation of the kings. These four great beasts are four kings who shall arise out of the earth. Just let the Bible interpret itself, would we? People just get all crazy on their interpretation. But the saints of the Most High shall receive the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, forever, and ever. That gives new light to that 1,000-year reign stuff that you read about over in Revelation chapter 20. Forever, forever, and ever. Verse 19, then I desired to know the truth about the fourth beast, which was different from all the rest, exceedingly terrifying, with its teeth of iron and claws of bronze, and which devoured and broke in pieces and stamped what was left with its feet, and about the 10 horns that were on its head. And the other horn that came up, and before which three of them fell, the horn that had eyes and a mouth that spoke great things and that seemed greater than its companions. As I looked, this horn made war with the saints, prevailed over them until the Ancient of Days came, and judgment was given for the saints of the Most High, and the time came when the saints possessed the kingdom. I want to know about all that stuff. Daniel, he's confused just as we are, and he's alarmed about it too. And the angel is giving the interpretation here, giving us some insight. First of all, four beasts, four kingdoms. We've talked about that already. The saints receive the kingdom. And again, verses 19 through 22, we have another picture of the little horn blaspheming God, God coming in judgment on it. The beast that Daniel is asking about is the beast from verses 7 through 8. And it is the totality of the Roman Empire. In Revelation, it's the beast within the beast, which is one of the horns. This fourth beast is a fourth kingdom, and that kingdom historically is Rome. The 10 horns are the first 10 kings of Rome. Who are we talking about? Augustus, Tiberius, Caligula, Claudius, Nero, Galba, Otho, Vitellus, Vespasian, and Titus. Those are the first 10 emperors of Rome. Augustus, he reigns for 41 years. Tiberius for 23. Caligula, he reigns for 4 years. Claudius for 13 years. Nero for 31 years. Then you get these short-term kings here. Galba, Otho, Vitellus. Galba rules for 6 months. Otho for 4 months. Vitellus for 9 months. Not even full years in either of those cases. Then Vespasian after that for 10 years. Titus for 2 years. Remember, the 10 horns, they're not equal to the 10 toes. 10 toes are not mentioned over in chapter 2. So we have something weird going on with the toes here. Anyway, Julius Caesar, he's not one of the kings, not one of the emperors of Rome, because he was not elected by the Roman Senate. And that's really what we're dealing with here with these 10 kings. That's how precise the history and the prophecy is concerning this. But another horn comes up, this 11th horn, and it uproots 3 of the original 10 horns. Verse 24 talked about that. We've already read that. This is Domitian. Domitian, keep that name in your mind because it comes up again in Revelation when we talk about that. History bears out he's the 11th king, and he's involved in an uprooting, as it were, of 3 kings. Here's how it happens, historically speaking. When Nero dies, Vespasian is busy over in Jerusalem trying to put down a rebellion. That's actually leading up to AD 70 and the destruction of Jerusalem. He's called to Rome to become emperor after Nero dies, but it took some time to get there. And so he leaves Titus in charge to put down the Judean rebellion, which he does, Titus does, AD 70. Meanwhile, Domitian is over in Rome after Nero dies. Domitian, by the way, he's the brother of Titus, and he's the son of Vespasian. Remember, Vespasian, he's coming from Jerusalem to Rome. Domitian stayed there. During that time, 3 guys, first Galba, then Otho, then Vitellus, are all elected by the Senate to the emperorship of Rome. These 3, they're generals. They fought each other to become the emperor, and it just turns out they weren't emperors for very long as a result. But it's interesting, Vitellus's demise comes about because Domitian, who is in Rome when Vitellus kills Otho, and Domitian, he forms an alliance with this guy named Anthony, and they together defeat Vitellus, and the people actually encourage Domitian, hey, become our emperor, and just act as emperor until your father gets back from Jerusalem. But he doesn't. Vespasian comes back, and he is crowned emperor of Rome. He rules for 10 years. But it's important to realize Domitian had something to do with the overthrow of Vitellus. And so, therefore, the 3 kings as a whole, Otho, Galba, Otho, and Vitellus, he could have acted as king for a while, but he doesn't. He's going to wait his turn. And that lends credence to the vision that Daniel has here in Daniel chapter 7. There's some interesting parallels over in Rome, Revelation chapter 17 about the woman who's the great city. That's in verse 18. She sits on 7 mountains. Rome was built on 7 mountains. And then you have to do some explanation there in Revelation 17, verses 9 and 10 about, you know, there's 5 kings and then one that is and one that's to come. And then this 8th that comes, this 8th little beast that goes on destruction and stuff like that. That's all Domitian. And I'll work on the explanation of that when we actually get to Revelation 17. But it's interesting how this all works out here and how it's pictured here in Daniel, right down to the very details. Verse 27 here. Let me read that. Verse 23, excuse me. Thus he said, as for the fourth beast, there shall be a fourth kingdom on earth, which shall be different from all the kingdoms. It shall devour the whole earth and trample it down and break it to pieces. We've read about the 10 horns. We've read about the blasphemous words, which, by the way, very interesting, very similar to Revelation 13, verses 2 and following. A lot of similarities between Revelation 13 and Daniel chapter 7. And in fact, you find out who's empowering this beast. You find out who's empowering this 11th horn. It's the dragon. It's Satan. And you get this stuff about arrogant words, very similar to the great things that are being spoken by the mouth of this little horn here. So you got a lot of these parallels here, which are essential if we're going to understand what's going to happen in Revelation chapters 13 and 17 as well. Anyway, the one who's coming, Domitian, he's going to be different than all the others. He's going to try different things. He's going to try to change the times and the law. And in fact, Suetonius, in his histories, he records how Domitian changed the names of some of the months to try and glorify himself. It's actually amazing the lengths to which Domitian will go to try and make himself a god. But his dominion is taken away, verse 26, when the court sits in judgment. That puts a stop to it. God issues his judgment, and he's annihilated, essentially, consumed and destroyed to the end. In other words, verse 27, the kingdom and the dominion and the greatness of the kingdoms under the whole heaven shall be given to the people, the saints of the Most High. Their kingdom shall be an everlasting kingdom, and all dominions shall serve and obey them. In other words, we're going back to things as normal. Here is the end of the matter. Verse 28. Here is the end of the matter. As for me, Daniel, my thoughts greatly alarmed me, and my color changed, and I kept the matter in my heart. He is absolutely sick over this thing. He's sick about it. When you look at it, what the saints of God are going to have to endure, and indeed, I'll go into great detail when we deal with the book of Revelation, just everything that was against God's people, the saints of God in that time, and what Domitian during his reign does. Daniel looks forward to it partially. We don't get a real full explanation of what's going on here, but by the time we get to John, when he writes the Revelation, I mean, it's very graphic as to what is going to happen to the saints. It's going to be bad, bad, bad. But chapter 7 of Daniel is all dedicated to saying, here is history unfolding. There's one who is going to become, who's going to be right on the heels, of God's kingdom when he shows up, when he establishes his kingdom. And as a result, since Domitian comes right after God establishes his kingdom, the kingdom of the Son here on earth, Daniel chapter 2, Acts chapter 2, relatively speaking, again, Domitian comes on right on the heels of that, and he's going to persecute the saints. This is history, folks. This is history, and guess what happens? It happens exactly as Daniel predicted it would. Why? He's got the excellent spirit. He's got the spirit of God within him, giving him this revelation, giving him, helping him to understand what he's going to see. This certainly verifies what you see in Revelation chapter 12 and verse 17. Then the dragon became furious with the woman and went off to make war on the rest of her offspring, on those who keep the commandments of God and hold to the testimony of Jesus. That picks right up where Daniel sort of leaves off here. And chapter 13, a lot of detail there, a lot of parallels there between Daniel 7 and Revelation 13, as well as Revelation chapter 17. Again, Daniel is such a powerful witness. If you take it just as it is for what it is a phenomenal book which will help confirm your faith. It's a powerful book of evidence as a result of the fact that it is recording history before it's history. Daniel, what is this? 500, 600 years, as it were, before this stuff happens, Daniel's already saying, yep, this is how it's going to happen. And he's right, right down to the very letter. I'm out of time. Didn't get to question of the day. We'll have to make up for it some other time. Feel free to leave a comment on the website. I always like to hear what you have to say. Also, search Facebook for the Life from the Pulpit page on Facebook and like that page. Get all the updates when I go live with the podcast or update the blog. Speaking of the blog, follow me on, I should say, be sure to stop by the Life from the Pulpit blog, www.lifefromthepulpit.wordpress.com. All of my commentary there on Luke, James, 1 John, all there, all available, all free for you to use and peruse in your everyday Bible study. Follow me on Twitter, @inpulpit, @N as in Nick, pulpit, P-U-L-P-I-T. Now on iTunes, search the iTunes store for the Life from the Pulpit podcast. You get all the episodes downloaded to your particular iDevice. Check out Merced Church of Christ website, mercedchurchofchrist.org. Lots of sermon audio there to help you in your Bible study. And as always, grace be with you all. Thanks for listening.